Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live, and I'm actually talking to you from Los Angeles Ronald McDonald House with Jeffrey Janis, who is the Director of Development. And we met kind of by accident. I'd been to Ronald McDonald House twice in evenings where we were bringing dinner, I think is what it was, with a group of us. And I was so overwhelmed by the importance and beauty of what you do for people that I thought it would be really nice if we could talk. And now I know that you've got a lot of other things to talk about also.
Well, thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be on this.
Thank you for saying yes. It's my favorite word, by the way, is yes, I'll do it. Sharing stories is really important. Tell me, well, let's start with you. You had said that you'd been in the nonprofit world for a long time.
Yes.
Start wherever you like.
I start typically where I start in the beginning, which is I've been doing volunteer work my entire life. A story I always love to tell people is that when I was a child and trick-or-treating, my favorite part was actually the UNICEF cans. And I used to love to get people to give to UNICEF. I didn't care about the candy. I wanted to get that money from UNICEF.
Now, what do you think made you as a child be aware of something like that?
I think it was the way I was raised. I think my parents just always instilled in me that there are other people who are less fortunate, and yet you need to help others, and that the world is not always fair and equal. And I always felt that my life was always so easy compared to so many others.
True.
That I wanted to help.
And you got an obvious joy in this, even as a child.
Even as a child, I look forward to Halloween for the UNICEF can.
Okay, go ahead.
That was how it really started. And then went to college, was very involved as a volunteer in many groups. I was involved with a group called PIRG, which is Public Interest Research Group. And I was the chair of that at George Washington University. And then I moved to L.A., where I decided to go to graduate school. And I have an MBA with a focus in nonprofit management. And I've spent my
Something that didn't exist 50 years ago.
Correct.
Period.
Correct.
Interesting how the world changes to meet a need, you know?
Yes. And so I was graduated from that program, and then I've been working doing nonprofit stuff my entire professional life since then. The one thing I also say is my little blip in that is that when I was 44 years old, I actually became a Peace Corps volunteer and went to Ukraine. And I was there from 2004 to 2006.
What did you do there, actually?
So I actually was a business volunteer, and I was actually working for a couple of nonprofits, helping them with fundraising, grant writing, strategic planning, helping—
So that they could start businesses, individual people?
Nonprofits. I was actually working nonprofits there and helping them to raise money. And it was quite an amazing experience. I actually was there— 2004 was when the Orange Revolution happened, which was when the president became—he was poisoned. I'm not sure if you remember this, and his face became all pockmarked.
Oh, yes, yes, I do.
Everyone's reaction is always, oh, yes.
Oh, yes, covering your eyes because that was, oh, yes.
So that
was a big mystery behind that also.
Yes.
Can you just fill people in and talk about what that, yeah.
The basic story, and I'm trying not to get too political here, or giving my opinions.
Up to you.
Thank you.
It's your time, and you can give whatever opinions you feel safe giving.
Thank you. So basically, he was one of the candidates running for office, and he was poisoned.
Yes.
They do not know for sure who poisoned him, but the people felt the election was rigged.
I remember
and
that.
And so people then protested on the streets. They then had another election, and then they said that he won.
But he died.
Oh, he's still alive.
Oh, he is still alive.
He's still alive.
Okay.
And then...
What's become of him?
I know he's still around. And then the candidate who was running against him at that point actually was the president. And he was one who was just kicked out about a year ago. And they had the serious revolution, which is going on in Ukraine now, which has been out for over a year. And it's been very painful for those of us who have a direct connection to Ukraine.
Okay, so your direct connection is that you've got friends there, people you're close with, if you were there for 2 years.
Correct. So I have...
You have a heritage from the Ukraine, is that right?
So it turns out, I mean, I've always known, being Jewish, I knew that my family was always from Eastern Europe. I never really knew where. And subsequently, actually in the last year or two, I have found a huge branch of my family tree that I never knew existed. And from that, turns out that a whole large chunk of my family actually is from a small town about 60 miles away from where I was living in Ukraine.
And still there, this family branch?
I don't know if any of them are still in Ukraine. I think most of them actually were killed in the Holocaust.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so you know who they are as a family tree. You just don't know.
So I actually have met some of the grandchildren of this family who lived in that small town, Ukraine.
Okay. You talk. I'm going to cry.
Okay.
Oh my!
So, yeah, I discovered grandchildren and great grandchildren who actually survived, and their parents survived, and I actually just discovered them. I knew that my family was from Eastern Europe. I was always told Russia, Poland, which I knew basically
shifted
Ukraine.
Also.
But when I lived in Ukraine, I lived with a family for the first 3 months, and I refer to them as my host parents.
Sure.
But they are 7 years older than me, and I still refer to them as my mom and my papa.
Yes.
And when I lived in Ukraine for the 2 years, I saw them on a regular basis. And now I've been back. I came back in 2006, and I still call them minimum four times a year.
Okay. So how do you can just call on the telephone? Connection?
I'm actually calling through Skype.
Skype. I'm sorry. I forgot about Skype.
But they don't have a computer.
So what? How
so
does
I
that?
Actually, I use Skype to call their home phone. Because it's actually cheaper than just calling direct.
Oh,
so love Skype. A little Skype commercial here.
Yes, good for – I mean, just a miracle time that you can find people and be in touch with people and find your own – parts of your own self.
And then I still have to speak Russian to them.
Yes.
When I went to Ukraine, I didn't know any Russian, and I had to learn it very quickly. And I still kind of try to keep it up so I can communicate
good
with my family.
Good for you. Oh, good. Well, so. Let's just shift over to – Ronald McDonald House,
sure.
If we could also.
So the Ronald McDonald House is now 40 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I actually work at the Los Angeles Ronald McDonald House. There are now 347 Ronald McDonald Houses located throughout the world.
And they're always near hospitals where children are.
Correct.
So
actually the Los Angeles House happens to be the third house in the entire system.
Mm-hmm.
The first house was in Philadelphia, second house Chicago, and the third house that was chartered was in Los Angeles. And we actually opened our doors in 1980. We had our first building open in 1980. We did an addition in 1994, and we did another building in 2008.
So how does it work? How do families come to you? My understanding is a family can move in all together, and then the children are in treatment during the day, and how does it all work?
That's basically correct. Basically, the Ronald McDonald House, what I typically say is, it's a place for families to stay while the child is sick and the child is being treated.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, a family for us maybe lives in Riverside or San Bernardino.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 100 miles away.
Right. Oh, and so they can't come to the hospital back and forth.
Right. So they're not going to stay, they're not going to drive back and forth every day while the child is getting cancer treatment.
Right. Oh, and is the children in the hospital full time that they're here? Or they No, because I've seen children here.
Correct. So it's also children who are being treated.
By day. And then they come.
It's a combination. So we have some kids who stay here and they are actually maybe being treated for cancer and they're getting chemo, so they're back and forth.
Maybe
they have complications, so they then have to check in the hospital for a week. We recently had a family stay here. It was a fascinating story, actually. It was a family. It was a mother and a father, and they checked in. And at the time, she was 36 weeks pregnant. But she knew that with one of the twins, they would have to have surgery as soon as was born.
How does that get determined?
Through an ultrasound, when she was 25 weeks old, they discovered that she had a boy and a girl, and they discovered the boy.
They're not identical. So
no.
Okay.
But they knew that the boy actually had a heart problem, and so they knew that they'd have to stay here.
Oh, so, I see. So it's not just cancer treatment; it's all kinds of treatment.
It's basically cancer and/or life-threatening illnesses.
Life-threatening. Okay.
And that's basically what the families are for. And so this is a family that she actually checked in when she was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
So people say, well, how old do you have to be to stay? You can stay here when you're still...
Yes, prenatal.
Prenatal. Yeah. That, so the mother stayed here. They then induced labor. She had the child. The child was... the baby boy was immediately operated on. And they're actually going home, I think, today.
Oh, okay. So we often end up with a really good result.
We do.
So what are some of the other families... facing?
So, I mean, I would say a typical family that I say is a family who lives like in Riverside, San Bernardino. It's an hour away, and the child has cancer. The bulk of our families are cancer related. They're not going to be driving back and forth, I guess, while the treatment.
Right.
But also, what's really wonderful for me as a staff person is that maybe they come here and they're treated, and then 6 months later, everything looks wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
They still have to come back for checkups every 6 months, and we get to see them when they come back.
So
I've been here now 4.5 years, and I get to see these children on a regular basis, and I get to watch them grow up, and it's a wonderful experience. I said I've been doing nonprofit stuff my whole life, but this has been my favorite job by far, and a lot of it is just because I'm here.
You see results.
I see them. They're
very. So how does it work? What do the families have? They have like a couple of rooms together, and they have kitchen privilege. How does that work?
So in our house, we have 75 rooms total.
Mm-hmm.
Every room has beds. Typically, most of our rooms have two beds. They all have their own private bathroom. We actually have on every floor in our new building, we have washers and dryers that are free, and the detergent's free. We then have a communal kitchen where they can cook a meal for themselves. We provide a continental breakfast for the family. Mm-hmm. And then lunch and dinner, they're on their own. But mm-hmm. we do have groups that come in, and we'll actually volunteer, mm-hmm. and we call them Meals of Love. Mm-hmm. So if anyone is interested in coming in and saying, oh, I want to cook a meal for the family.
So, and that's at Ronald McDonald's houses all across the nation.
Correct.
So that's
a great opportunity.
So people can really get involved and help. And what do? They call the office wherever it is near them.
I call the local. Typically, there's a volunteer, a staff person who works mm-hmm. with volunteers.
So you can get a group of people together and provide dinner.
Correct.
Like once a month or
once a week, uh-huh. once a month.
Yes.
You do it once every 6 months, whatever you'd like to do. Mm-hmm. Every house has different rules as to how many people you have to cook for, because we're one of the larger houses. We say you have to cook for 100 people.
Yes.
Whereas a house that's maybe only has 10 rooms,
sure.
we say you have to cook for 20
right.
people.
And do you hear from families forever, do you think? I'm wondering if the families, well, if you have families from the same area, I'm wondering if they would naturally connect and bond and become friends that stay.
I think one of the best stories about that is families that you'll have a family that maybe one family is from Iraq and another mm-hmm. family is from Spain, mm-hmm. and they don't speak the same language. But somehow they become the best of friends, mm-hmm. and the children become best of friends, and somehow they learn to communicate.
Yes.
And I love to sit there and watch these kids playing with each other, and I think, why can't we as adults play like this?
Wouldn't that be nice?
Why do we need to have a language barrier? Children don't need that.
Right.
And it's wonderful to see that. So the families, I think what's also amazing, it's rare that I meet someone who doesn't say, oh, I know someone who stayed at Ronald McDonald House, or my cousin stayed there. Everyone seems to have a connection or know someone who did, because we are so big and we do serve so many families.
Now, how do people know to call you or come to you? Do the hospitals have a link to you?
So it typically comes through the local hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Typically the hospital, the social worker, the nurse, the doctor, or if it's a clinic, they fill out the paperwork. They fill out the paperwork saying the family is checking on this date and what day the family is checking out. So that way we have a sense of what is going on and who the family is.
And what about the emotional side of it?
So actually at the Los Angeles House,
when parents are just going through heartbreak and fear and...
So that's actually a great question. It's very special for the Los Angeles House. We actually have a team, it's called a Family Support Services Team, and these are PhD interns who provide support to our families.
PhD interns in a particular field?
In psychology.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And they provide support to the families. And we have, I think, about 7 people on staff that speak a variety of different languages. So when the families come in, they have someone they can speak with who can provide support. And they also do a daily fun club, which is going to be games and toys and arts and crafts to help support the family.
And what about financially? I remember this because I remember one family I talked to a couple of years ago when I was here, and they had lost their home, had to give up their jobs, all to take care of this child, and they had pretty much no resources left. I guess sometimes people have to just really start over.
At a Ronald McDonald
yes.
House.
And I imagine some who can then help and make donations after and do it.
Correct.
Yes.
They do. We charge $25 a night. There are mm-hmm. some houses that charge less than that. The $25 a night is the maximum. When I hear $25 a night and you think, oh, my God, that's so cheap. And you say,
it adds up for,
well,
you know.
If you're living in Riverside and you're paying $25 a night to stay here,
right.
that's $750 a month.
Sure.
So if you have a rent or a mortgage back in Riverside,
yes, well, that's,
and you're staying here, right. $25 a night or $750
isn't going
a month,
to that more, yes.
$750 a month that you still have to pay back home,
right.
all of a sudden it becomes very expensive.
Yes, and that's what this family had faced.
Many of our, that's
yes.
all of our families have to face
sure.
if they're staying here for long term.
Yeah.
They have $750 a month you have to face. And so that's why about 72% of our families at the LA house cannot even afford the $25 a night.
Right. So I kind of lost sight of the fact that you still have to pay mortgage and all your bills for, yes, of course, you're not trading it in any way. What else would you like us to know? What do you think people should know about Ronald McDonald House? And
you know, it was funny. I was thinking about this the other day, and I was thinking so many of my friends will look at me and say, oh, it must be so difficult to work there. Mm-hmm. And my response is the exact opposite for me.
Well, that when I came in, my question to you was, I guess there are some people who are heartbroken all the time, and then other people who are not because it's going towards making people comfortable and helping and stepping in an impossible situation in a positive way.
And I think I tend to try to be the eternal optimist.
Yes.
And think that there are so many families that we are helping, and there are so many families
exactly.
that we are touching.
Yes.
And we get to see the children grow old.
Yes.
And we get to watch them as they grow up. And it's such a wonderful experience to sit there and to be here with the families.
Yes.
I find it inspirational.
That's
I think
nice.
It's wonderful that a child can have cancer and can have no hair and can be running around the dining room and no one cares.
Mm-hmm.
And the other children don't care.
Yes.
Everyone treats everyone the same.
Yes.
And
yes.
it kind of is an equalizer. And it puts a certain perspective on my own life.
Mm-hmm.
It reminds me how lucky my own life is. And I cannot imagine what it would be like to be a child, have mm-hmm. a child who has a life-threatening illness.
Yes. I think that's the scariest thing there is for parents. So let me ask you something about, are you a letter writer? I want to move to love letters because...
Sometimes I used to write a lot more letters. The trouble is now with the emails and computers,
it's easier.
It's much easier to just kind of like write something, but they're not long love letters typically.
Right.
But
they're a message.
Yes.
Which also letters used to be and still can be.
Yes.
But can you sense a difference between the email message and when you actually write something?
Yes.
What
There's
is
no
that?
Question. Well, I have to say it was interesting. I just got a card from a very close friend. And she actually went out and bought a card, and she wrote something on the card, and it made such a difference. And I opened this card, and I remember thinking to myself, I need to save this.
People do.
And you save cards that have a handwritten note.
Handwriting. King.
Handwritten.
And I think what happens is when you get that letter, or somebody gets that letter from you, and you've got family halfway across the world, or people you love, and family also, right?
So, yes, I guess she's...
And they're touching something that's felt the touch of your hand.
Yes.
I think that's just...
There's nothing like
makes
that.
Makes a difference. Well, who would you write to if you were to write a love letter right now?
I think if I were to write a love letter right now, as I was thinking probably the one I most recently wrote, which would be to my host family in Ukraine.
So you've done that.
I do it on a fairly regular basis.
Oh, how nice. So in addition to Skype and...
Skyping them, I will often... I just came back from a wonderful vacation, and I was in Tahiti and Bora Bora, and I sent them photos from the trip, and I included a little love letter, letting them know how much I appreciate still what they've done for me.
Oh, see, that I think that's the key, because there's a difference between, here's about my vacation, and I'm thinking of you, or including something about their best qualities, which I think is the earmark of a really wonderful love letters.
Thank you.
Love letter. It's about something about them.
Yeah, and I actually because of what's going on in Ukraine, it's so difficult right now. I mean, when I was living there, the exchange rate for the hryvnia, which is their currency, to a dollar was 5 to 1.
Mm-hmm.
It is currently about 25 to 1,
mm-hmm.
and so everything is devalued, and they are struggling financially. And I have offered to help them financially, and they refuse to take me up on that, and that's okay, and I understand. And it's a shame that they won't be able to hear this podcast because, first of all, they don't speak English. And
there's always a way around it.
So,
okay, go ahead.
But I think they're the people I think about. I think people often say to me, well, go to your happy spot. And my happy spot is sitting in my host mother's kitchen and sitting on a little four-legged stool and just sitting there and just talking with
her. Do you remember particular foods or cooking or...
Oh, many.
Sites or clothing. I'll tell you why I'm asking. Because the specifics like that in a letter, those will survive for generations if you use good, you know, indelible ink and good paper.
That's correct.
Yes. And it'll be their children and grandchildren will have a little additional something in their legacy because they'll be able to read what their parents did for somebody, what their grandparents did. So it's a gift that goes for generations. But if you say things like, you know, I remember the whatever it is that you cooked.
You're inspiring me. I'd have to write them a real letter.
Yes. Oh, I hope you do. Homework. And okay. Really specific. I remember the taste of your, I forgot how you say stuffed cabbage. Yes.
Gulubsi.
Gulubsi.
Or Gulubsi, depends on your Russian or Ukrainian pronunciation.
Okay. So, and can you write that in Russian?
I'll figure it out. But I have to write the whole letter in Russian because they don't speak any English.
Oh, okay. Can you do that?
Google Translate.
That comes out a little funny sometimes.
Yes, it does.
I have a thought. What if you did one in Google Translate or however you struggle through it, and then you attach a copy that's just in English, and maybe typewritten or maybe from the computer? I don't think that would hurt, just so they have something down the line that has your handwriting. And the fact that you're struggling to say it in a language they understand just adds to the beauty. And then in two generations, when they find it in English attached to it, they'll be able to take it to somebody and get the whole story.
That's a great idea.
Mm-hmm. There's so many ways to...
That's okay.
So even I remember what you looked like in that blue house coat you wore and made me...
I'm looking at you. I'm like, that's what she had. She had the blue...
Did she really? Okay, good.
She had a blue
bathrobe. Do you want me to do more mind reading?
I was thinking, that's pretty good. Yeah, she had a royal blue bathrobe that she wore all the time.
Okay, so all these things that you're saying with that smile on your gorgeous face is the love letter.
Okay.
And I'm telling you, you know, when you look at floppy disks, I mean, hold up a floppy disk to a 20-year-old. Uh-huh. Toss it over your shoulder.
Right.
They're not going to know what the other... All these miracles of communication and information storage, they corrode, they don't last, they get outdated. Even if your VCRs are still good, go find something to play it in.
Okay.
You know? I mean, you can throw yourself on eBay, but that only lasts for so long. But handwritten letters, we have them that are 400 years old. I have some in my collection of, they're like 120 years old, and they look like they were written yesterday. You can't retrieve an email that's stored on a floppy disk. I mean,
Right. Yeah.
The only foolproof storage system is really a handwritten letter.
I'm going to have to do that.
Okay. I'm so glad we had this little chat. And I'm curious about one other thing.
Sure.
Do the children here and the families, I'm guessing that they've got enough to do without a love letter writing program.
They're pretty busy.
Right.
They have very full lives.
Right.
But I think the one thing I would kind of go back and just say quickly is that if you say to any family, what's the best thing about staying at the Ronald McDonald House?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have a beautiful building. It looks like a very nice hotel.
Mm-hmm.
We have a playroom. We have a computer room. We've got washers and dryers. I said they're free. We've got barbecues. What they all say is the support they get from each other and knowing that they're not going through this alone. And that's something that you can't build.
No, you certainly can't.
And that's the best thing. So in a sense of
–
and so typically, even like when you're here now during the day, you're saying, where is everybody? Most people are in the hospital with their child. Or they're in treatment with the child.
Right.
Or if the healthy sibling is in school.
Oh, so they enroll in the local school here.
And they're here for a long time.
Good point, yes. And, well, I was thinking even because I tend to look at letters as part of your history documented in your own hand. And like the tree you plant, whose shade you know you will never sit under, but somebody will. It's one of those acts of faith.
That's a great idea.
So I'm just wondering, you know, even from parents, like before they go to sleep, to write a little note to a child and mail it to that child at home. And when they get home, they'll have.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
I will talk to our staff and see.
Okay.
I mean, they'd be
that would make me happy. Yes.
Okay. I'll check
because,
into that.
You know, even if you write letters to yourselves, you see that envelope with real handwriting on your pile of mail, it's really a little extra gift.
I almost feel like I'm not sure I even know how to write a whole letter. I mean, it's so rare that you actually write and
well, everything you every okay. So
it's so funny you say that. I keep thinking I would type it, but you're
that's
right,
no,
but
that's
you're right.
A really good point. Well, you can type it first because you think it's
right.
And then just copy it in your own
right.
handwriting. But also, I think people like when we email. And we text, that doesn't even count because that's so shorthand.
Right.
We tend not to allow ourselves the leisure of really expressing things fully. Because first of all, you get an email and you don't want to read two pages.
Right.
But in a letter, you just have more liberty. So every time you think something that makes you smile like that, you should just jot it down. It's part of it. Oh, thank you for letting me do this with
you.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Any other questions?
No. Anything else you want to say about?
That's it.
I think we've covered a lot, and thank you again.
Thank you.
So until next time, this is Janet Gallen saying goodbye and
Jeffrey Janis.
Thank you, dear.